Hi everyone, so we are about to start. It will be good if folks can get seated. So anyone feeling sleepy? I'm feeling sleepy. Anyone else feeling sleepy? So probably others can keep us awake. So I work for Microsoft back in India. I just landed yesterday, so still in jet lag a bit. So it's kind of 3 in the night for me. Okay. So quickly, I'm Gautam. I'm a dev lead with Team Test product unit, working specifically on coded UI test part. So briefly, this is the agenda, like a quick overview of the test functionality, more focused toward the coded UI test. What's the story around custom control, how we are supporting it, extending the coded UI test functionality for the other UI frameworks, and what are the partnership opportunities and all. So quick show of hand, how many folks have used team test functionalities, like testing functionalities? So very few. And coded UI test? Okay. So maybe I will use this opportunity to introduce that slightly more in details. So to start with, this is the tester segment. This is the way we view the tester segmentation. So on the one end of this spectrum, there is a manual testers or generalist testers who are mostly doing the manual testing. They may be domain expert but have very little programming skills. On the other end of the spectrum, there is a specialist tester who is like expert developer or expert in coding skills and does a lot of white box and API testing. So in previous releases of Visual Studio, we were targeted more towards the specialist tester side. We had functionalities around unit testing, load testing, web testing, more targeted towards specialist testing. In this release, we have manual test runner and what Microsoft Test and Lab Manager, these kind of functionalities on the manual test side. And then the coded UI test functionality, which is more targeted towards the automation engineer, person with reasonably good coding skills, might still be doing more of black box testing, but like trying to automate a lot more functionalities, all those things. So as I said, you need to keep me awake. Feel free to interrupt with questions. So very briefly, the coded UI test features. So coded UI test is a new test type. It inherits from the unit test framework that we have. So that's another extension point. We have improved the unit test extensibility a lot for people who wants to write a new test type. And coded UI test is an example of that extension. Then it essentially includes a functionality for UI automation. There's a built-in recorder that you can use to record and generate code either in VB or C# out of it. And there's a rich API that you can use to write your automation hand-coded directly on web, WinForms, WPF, some of the supported platform. One of the key distinction between us and the competition probably is like intent-aware recording and resilient playback. I will go into this in depth in the next few slides. So at the core of coded UI test is a record and playback engine, the same engine we also use for fast-forwarding feature of manual testing. When you do manual testing, there's some feature to fast-forward through the app to do to get productivity gains. And it is also used to get actionable bug for no report scenario, no more no repro scenario. Overall, the feature is integrated with the ARM story, so I can build, run test, and deploy all these things as a part of my team build workflow, or I can use it as a part of my lab workflow, the lab management scenarios that we have. I can do local runs or remote runs. The data collectors are integrated, so when I am running coded UI test, I can collect data that I am interested in, all those things. So essentially, it's a first-class citizen, and there's a rich extensibility story built into it, which is why I'm here to present that. So let's cover the two things that I think are key distinction between us and some of the competitions. So the UI automation or the record and play thing has been around for quite a bit time. So one of the things that distinguishes us between competition is our recorder, I believe, is much more resilient, generates much richer code out of it. So the key aspect over there is intent-aware recording. So just to explain what I mean by that, so let us say I launch calc.exe by going to start menu of Win7 or Vista and then doing search for calc, and then as the result comes up, I click on one of the results. So instead of recording these raw actions that the user has done, we know that the intention of the user is to launch calc.exe. So the eventual recording is just a launch of calc.exe instead of some of those raw steps. So the advantage with that is the generated code will now work on XP where the search thing is not there. Or generated code will work on some other machine where I may not get the search result in the same order, in the same way, those kind of things. So this is just one example of intent-aware recording. There are just a lot of places where we use it to just ensure that the code is much more resilient and much more OS and browser agnostic. Then on the playback side, some of the key things that we have is like wait for ready. So essentially one of the goal for us was to ensure there's no thread.sleep in the code, or the rather user doesn't have to go and see, find that the code is not working, debug, okay, oh, I need a thread.sleep over here, add a bunch of it. Over time, you add more sleeps than required because it doesn't work on some slow machine, and the code is not resilient. It breaks quite often, those kind of things. So for us, that was one of the key challenges that we took on solving to ensure there's no requirement for you to add thread.sleep. So we have a very rich algorithms to wait till the UI is ready to take the input. And we do that for, say, AJAX kind of request where the UI is very dynamic, changing. We do that for WinForms, WPF, all these things. The second key aspect is ensure visible. So while you are doing the recording and all, we deliberately ignore all the actions that you have done to get the UI to a visible state, like scrolling and all those things. And doing playback, we'll do those operations automatically. And we won't, the test won't pass if the UI is not, we are not able to make the UI visible. The advantage of that is, in certain scenarios, if my button is truncated and end user cannot make it visible, the test will fail and catch those bugs instead of it passing and later you finding that there's no way a user could get that button visible and click on that button. So we have a very rich algorithms to make it visible. If there are 3-4 levels of scrolling, we can still make it visible, all those things. The third is UI sync or UI synchronization. So once we send the input, we verify the actual control has received those input. And if some other control in the same application is receiving those input, we'll cancel that input out so that there's no side effect of it. So examples like, the framework is about to send a keyboard input and some other window comes on the top. So it will ensure that it retries that input instead of failing at that point. So a lot of these things are there which overall makes the playback much more resilient. So enough of talking. Let me demo all of this. So to start with, I have a standard test project the way you would do for unit test or some other test. And to create a new coded UI test, I do test, new test, and I get the coded UI test option right over here. We support C# VB, so I can choose anything. For this, I'm choosing the C# option. Once I click OK, I will get options, whether I want to record and generate. So I want to record the test case now, or I need to import a already recorded strip, probably from my manual testing or other places, or I can even cancel out and do everything by hand coding. So for this demo, let me use the recorder. So I start by saying record, And in this demo, I will just go to Amazon site and try to buy a book and automate that scenario and see how it works. So let me start the recorder. And what I will do is what I have mentioned earlier. I will search for Amazon. Sorry. So I search for Amazon. At this point, if you look at the recording, instead of the various steps that I did, essentially start, search for Amazon, click on the result, instead of all these things, it records just one action. So that is what I meant by intent-aware recording. So I go to books. Then, so one more thing to notice over here, the books was a menu that came up on hover. I didn't do any click, so we are able to record through that. I now search for my favorite book, Law Symbol. I find that. Instead of buying just that, I will take the offer of buying that with Da Vinci at a cheaper rate. So let us say at this point, this is what my test was supposed to do. And at this point, to get me generate the code out of it. So I will name the method as buyBook. And I want to assert that the total is correct. So I can do that. Add assertion. So I am asserting on the inner text. And generate that. Let me call this as a verify price. And finally, probably I have to do the cleanup step to ensure that I can rerun this test again and again. So I will record that, which is edit the shopping cart and delete these items. So as you see, when I delete, the page kind of gets refreshed. And close this. So generate this as a cleanup method. So let's end my recording over here. Let's quickly look through the code. So if we see through this, like the first thing, which was the launch of application, a launch of UI that got generated instead of the various items. And then the generated code is very much in object-oriented way with objects and operations on those objects. So mouse.click and all those things. So let us quickly play the code and then come back probably for more. I run this code. And while the code is running, you will be able to see that it's doing some of the things like which I mentioned earlier, to scroll to make the UI visible and waiting for the page. So I have just recorded. I haven't added any thread.sleep or anything. And so at this point, it should automatically scroll down to get the combo offer visible and then click on that. So it's still waiting for the page to be download to be complete. And then it has done the validation. It's going back, deleting. At delete, the page is auto-refreshing, so it's waiting for that refresh to complete and then complete it. So essentially, I've just recorded and played a complex scenario without touching the code, adding any sleep or anything. And this will work even if on a slow network, on something else. Okay. Can I have applause?
Yeah.
Yes.
How does it handle different screen resolutions?
Pardon?
How does it handle different screen resolutions? You know, 1024 by 768?
Yeah, not a problem. We will handle it. We'll get the things still scrolled into the view. And so essentially, if the user can do the actions, we'll be able to do the actions. If the screen resolution is such and the UI is getting chopped and there's no way for the user to scroll and get to that button and click, we'll also fail. Yes? You had some question.
Mm-hmm. Is there a method to just get that data and store it in a database somewhere? I could use this for something totally different from testing.
Uh-huh. So we don't have that out of the box kind of thing. You can write it. One thing probably in this context is like the recording itself. The recording is nothing but a XML file. So, and that XML file is also exposed to the object model. So probably in your scenario, you can do use this XML file and do something with it. So this section kind of defines what are my actions. So these are the various actions I had done. And there's another section which defines what are my objects. So these are the objects. So if for each object, it is defining what is the search condition. So it's an AND condition of three property conditions. So these kind of things. The entire recording is nothing but this XML file, and it's exposed to object model. So you can do some of those stuff. And maybe we can talk also after this presentation to understand more and discuss. Yeah?
What happens if it fails? Do you have to just come up with an error message, or is there a test? Can you run a test sequence, test harness?
So the test harness is already there. This is the same test harness that unit test uses and all those things. So if it fails, your experience would be pretty much similar to the unit test. You will get the one-line failure message, the details on the failure. If you have some tracing of your applications, you will get those. This is integrated with data collectors. So for all those data collectors, information will be there. For example, system information will be there. All those things. Let me show you the past case. That will give you some idea. So in this case, it passed. But you will get if it has failed, you will get something over here. I didn't have any collector turned on, so all those collector information will be there as attachments. So system information I might be collecting. We saw the IntelliTrace thing a couple of sessions back. So those things can, again, be my collector data that is coming up from the thing.
How would you turn on collector data? What does that mean?
So I can go to the test settings and just turn it on. Okay. There's a UI where I can just check and check. Yes. Yes, we listen to various IE events, and we have come up with our own algorithms and heuristics based on those. Yes. Yes. So we support recording in IE, and with our RTM version, we have playback support for Firefox also as a CTP support. Within a few months, we'll come up with the proper. Release version support for Firefox. Okay. So, but whatever you recorded on IE, the same code will work on Firefox. You don't have to.
Events that are not triggered in Firefox.
We haven't investigated the recording aspect deeply in Firefox yet. Yes.
Is the XML that you showed us?
So that is not needed. That information is more like for us to generate the code. So it's kind of your designer file. So the XML acts as a designer file where we generate the code. So
in that case, I would have a question of, like, what happens if your page content changes? Let's say the page structure changes and then the whatever it is that you use as identifiers for individual elements change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the maintenance story behind?
Yes. So I was coming to that. So in my this in the actual code when I recorded it as a smaller methods. So I can re-record any of these methods. So I need to be aware what is my unit that may be changing or what is the unit that goes together. And I should be recording those as a smaller methods and I can re-record them. All the code generation, everything can will happen.
So the maintenance story is go re-record.
Yeah. Re-record the method. If there are small changes, you can always fix it by hand. If there are bigger changes, you're better off re-recording. Yeah, so by hand, I can override some of the parameters. So for example, the site that I launched, this is a parameter out here. So I can fix the parameter here, or I can, before running the recorded method, we call another function where I can override those parameters. Maybe I can do that with you say, outside after the presentation. Right? Yes?
Just a quick question on putting tests like this together is all about finding bugs. So what happens in the case of failure? What kind of reporting at the detailed level do you get from coding your tests?
OK. Yeah, so in case of, it's pretty much same as what the other person over here asked, what kind of details I get in case of failures. So,
sorry. Doran, it might be worth popping open test settings and showing all the different collectors we should look at.
Yeah. Just to give an idea. So this is a test setting which will show you what are the various correctors and all that I can, data that I can correct. So these are the various correctors that I can turn on and correct. So integrity trace was something that we saw a few sessions back, which is nothing but a historical debugging. I can correct the video recording, screen recording of my entire test. So while the test is going on, there's a video that is capturing all the screens. So that might be very helpful in debugging what exact failure happened. There is a system information that I can correct. So these are probably the few that will help you debug in case of failure. You can correct event logs and all those other things in advanced cases. There's a test impact and code coverage that can help you to gather the data for analysis while you're running the test. So all these corrector information will show up in case of failure.
When you compile the app that you're testing, do you have to have certain attributes turned on to be able to enable some of those corrections? Like, do I need symbols loaded? Do I need all that sort of thing?
Yeah, for code coverage, yes.
Okay, so
for code coverage and test impact.
So there's certain types of attributes you need for those guys.
Not attributes. For those, the compilation is different.
Yes.
It's instrumented binaries.
Yeah.
Yes.
Only for code coverage.
Oh, okay. Only for code coverage. Yes.
I got a question about the impact of where I'm recording. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool feature. I'm wondering, is this configurable? Like, what if the intent of the test truly is to make sure that the search box and the start menu works?
Yeah, but that will be there only if you're a Windows team, right? For other teams, okay. Windows team or search provider. Yeah. So I get your question. Yes. So to answer in this way is it's not configurable. So at the design level, it is configurable, but we haven't exposed all those settings properly through the UI. So we can always do some hacks in the config file and all to set those. But in this case, we haven't exposed them from the UI. So let me move on.
There was one more question back here, which was, can people write their own collectors? And the answer is yes.
Yes.
So we're shipping with like 9 or 10 in the box. You can write your own. It's about 20 lines. A C sharp to write a collector that does nothing, everything else is your business once you capture that.
Hmm. Yeah, so that's also covered in one of the slides, what all you can do. Okay, so let me get back to the presentation. So this guide roughly summarizes what is the various platform support that we have today. On the top side, there are various Microsoft technologies and all that we support with, and we will continue to support. Then towards the bottom, things that are clearly we're not supporting today and we are not going to invest in the near future. In the middle, things are a bit hazy. Some has partial support today, and we are planning to add more support in the future. So essentially, all those IE7, IE8, WinForms, WPF, Win32, MFC, all these are things that we support well. Then Silverlight, Firefox, SharePoint, Office application, these are some of the things that will add support in the future.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah.
But I think many here are in a position where they test an application that's under development, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it quite often happens that people come up with their proprietary UI frameworks. Is there something that the application developers should do? Right?
Yeah, I will cover that in the talk. So that's the next section. Thanks. Okay. And the third category is things that we are clearly not thinking in the near future. Okay. And this is probably, if you have expertise in some of these platforms, it's a good opportunity for you to partner with us. So this is what the other gentleman asked, leading to his question, what is the support for custom controls? And the third section probably is if I have altogether my custom UI technologies or something that we haven't supported, how can we add support to that? So the first part, support for custom controls. One of the common complaints people have is UI automation doesn't work with custom controls, right? And in most cases, the cause is bad accessibility from the custom control side. So let me quickly demo this and then come back and discuss more. What I have here is a simple photo album kind of application in which on the left side there is a custom control, which is a picture list box. So each item in this is a picture list item. So essentially, it has a picture with some title and time taken, all this information about the picture. And so this is one custom control that I have. The other custom control out here is this spread button. So there's a main part of the button that will open the picture in the default editor, which in my case happens to be the paint. And there's a second part of the custom control, where I can select what editor I want to open. So these are the two custom controls. And if I try to do record and playback on this, let me do that. So let me quickly record a test that selects one of my favorite photos. Does edit of that in a default editor, closes that editor, and then does edit of that in some other editor. And I will generate that code. Okay. So if I go to this code and look how the edit on the main part of the spread button has happened. So first thing over here to notice that is recording for the picture list box item has happened properly. So it's properly setting list item to the photo. Instead, even though it is a custom control, it's still able to do that. The second thing to notice over here is the click on the main part of the photo. Main part of the spread button and the drop-down part of spread button both have the same UI object. So the button, entire button is coming as one UI object, this entire button, even though the drop-down part is different. If I play this with this exact settings, the test will pass. But if I change the settings, let us say my application has large font also, if I play this in this large font where the dimensions have changed, the test will fail because these are the two different UI components, but it has identified them as one and recorded them as one. So the problem lies in this case with the custom control. So let us quickly view the code for the split button. So here's the code for the split button custom control that I have. It inherits from the standard button, and the way I paint the split button is by overriding onPaint method. So I override the onPaint method and do some funky stuff over here to get the bounding rectangle, get another rectangle painted differently. So if I have to support record and play automation on this, the easiest option is to ensure the accessibility is proper. And doing that is not a big deal with the new framework. So I have a small code snippet. Let me first insert that and then demo. So this is probably around 20 lines of code that I have to write to ensure accessibility is proper. So the first part is instead of returning the default accessibility of the button, accessibility object of button, I say return my split button's accessibility object. And then in split button accessibility object, which inherits from the button accessibility object, the main difference over here I say is when the framework asks for child count, I say, yes, I have one child. And when the child index is 0, I return the accessibility object from the drop-down thing. The accessibility object of drop-down is out here. So again, the main difference, the main method over here is what is the bounding rectangle or the bounds for that drop-down object. So the way I paint the drop-down portion is by using a rectangle. So in this case, I get the access to that drop-down rectangle object right here from the actual button and just return the corresponding bounds of that rectangle. So let us compile and run this application once again with this. And let us record a test. So I will comment out the old recording and let me do a fresh recording over here. So first thing to notice is if I try to select the object, I can get the main button and I can get the drop-down button. Right here, if you can see the small blue rectangle getting painted on the drop-down button. So it can clearly recognize the two portions differently. So let me record over here. I do the same thing of selecting my favorite photo, editing it with the default editor by clicking on the main portion of split button, and then editing it in the non-default editor by getting the drop-down options and clicking that. And let me generate this code once again. If we go back to this and see over here, the first click has happened on one object, and the second click has happened on a totally different drop-down button object. So these are the two completely different. And if I play this, let me make this a large font so all the coordinates and everything changes, and let me play this back. So in this case, since the accessibility is proper, we'll still be able to find the object and all. So that also kind of goes back, that screen resolutions and all doesn't matter. Right? So back to the thing. So Can you repeat the question? I will repeat the question once I get that. Okay. It's okay.
I was wondering if there is a way to configure coded UI test to tell it what kind of UI technology it should use to explore the UI. This example here uses MSA, right? But let's say if the focus of the application development is to support Windows UI automation rather than MSA, is there a way to configure coded UI test to use that instead of MSA?
So the question is, from Microsoft today, there are two accessibility framework. One is Microsoft Active Accessibility, MSAA, and another is UI Automation, UIA. So the question, if I understand correctly, is how can I say use MSAA versus UIA or configure that, right, coded UI test? So in short, it doesn't matter. What we, from our side, try to do is we try to find the best thing. So for example, for WinForms, Win32 legacy applications, we'll try to use MSA. And for other things, we'll say WPF, we'll try to use UIA. Okay, and it doesn't matter because internally there is a proxy that can convert from one to another. So if you have implemented UIA properly and we are still calling the custom control through MSA, there's a bridge which will ensure that the UIA implementation gets converted to MSA and things still work. So in general, that should not be a problem.
But that also means that identification technologies such as automation IDs fall underneath the table. Yes, they don't get proxied.
No, so there's still equivalent. So for example, automation ID on UIA side matches with control name on MSAA side. Okay, so there's still kind of one-to-one equivalent for most of these things, right? And I can talk to you outside to understand more what exactly you are up to and see if we can answer that better. Okay, so just to summarize what we saw, there's a custom control that's not working fine, but by implementing accessibility with few lines of code, it works fine. So essentially, if you are a control vendor, try to implement the accessibility correctly. Better accessibility means better testability, more satisfied customer, all these things. And the other thing is if the accessibility is proper, the control is ready for coded UI test, VSTS 2010. Test is a big focus area for us in 2010 release. And ensuring that coded UI test work will help you ensure your controls sell more. So this is like probably one ask from all the control vendors to ensure they support accessibility properly. Has bad accessibility?
Better accessibility?
Okay. Yeah.
UI
so, good questions. So, there is a tool released by Microsoft. So, for Microsoft has two accessibility framework, MSA and UIA. For both these platforms, there is a tool released by Microsoft. For MSA called AcVerify, and for UIA called UIA Verify. These tools can be used to ensure the accessibility of the control is proper. Okay, these tools you can just run and it will summarize, give you a summary report of what are the problems in the custom control and all those things. If our requirement in general is not kind of 100% accessibility, but I think that's just running this tool and ensuring you get a good result out of it will be sufficient to ensure coded UI test works fine. Okay, so the third section of this talk is about extending for a different altogether UI framework. So let us say I have a UI framework, and in the previous part I showed a bunch of UI technologies that we are not supporting. So let us take Java, which we are not supporting, and so how can I get support for Java on coded UI tests? So this is what extending for different UI framework means. So first thing is it is easy to support, and I will demo that. The second aspect is I had earlier talked about wait for ready, ensure visible, some of these things, smart things that we do to ensure resilient playback. So for all these things, we have a lot of default algorithms and all that still work on some other technologies that we are not supporting. At the same time, there is an option to override and improve upon it by adding your own support, all those things. And this is also a partnership opportunity. There are a bunch of areas where we are not doing the work, and you can use this framework to support it. So before going into the extensibility part, let us quickly go through the architecture of it. And so at the bottom, we have various plugins that we built in the house. So we have a web plugins using MSHTML for IE, using a simple DOM for Firefox, all these things. Then we have rich client plugins using UIA and MSA for WinForms. So that's at the bottommost layer. There's an abstraction layer on top of it. And the rest of the record and playback and other pieces talk to the plugin using that technology abstraction layer. So then there's a recorder on one side. So the recorder key portion over there is the filter or the aggregation rule. This is what generates the intent-aware recording. So each intent is a filter or aggregation rule. Then on the playback side, there's API and there's a what we call property provider. So what a thing that can inspect the control and say what are the properties supported by that control. And at the topmost here, there's two different clients that we have today for this one is the test runner, where the same thing is used for fast forwarding and action log, these things. And the second part is the coded UI test that we are demoing. So we have extensibility almost built at all the layers over here. So at the bottommost, I can write my own third-party controls plugin to support some third-party framework that we have not supported. Then I can write my own custom aggregation rules or action filters to create my own intent-aware recording. So for example, some intent that we are not generating right, you can fix that. Then for some controls, I can write my own custom property providers that can give me more properties than what we have, or different properties that can customize how the code is generated, all those things. Then for the API itself, I can customize the API in a bunch of different ways. For example, there's a mouse class which has all the mouse functionalities, so I can customize that. I can add my loggers, those kind of things. Then at the topmost thing, I can create my own different client or UI. So this probably goes back to what you asked. How can I use that data to do something else? So I can do my own client UI on top of it. The entire object model is exposed, the XML file, reading it, how to do it, all those things. So let us see some of these things in action. Okay. So for example, going back to the earlier slide where I showed the platform support, Excel is something that we don't support well today. So in this, I will try to demo a simple sample plugin using which we can get basic Excel support working. So to start with, just to ensure, just to show that Excel is something that doesn't work well today, let me first show that. So going back to the earlier example, if I try and drag and drop on the spy tool on the Excel, I can clearly see that it's not recognizing any cell. It's recognizing the entire worksheet area as one control. That's a custom control where the accessibility is not that great. Okay. So I have this simple plugin where I am using the Excel VSTO, Excel object model through VSTO to get some of the properties and functionality for Excel working. So probably let us go through the code after the after doing using this plugin. So the using the plugin is very simple. I built this plugin, and the using part is just deploying it to the right folder. So I have this small batch script that copies the DLL to the right folder. So I have two files to copy to the correct folder. One is the actual plugin, another is the communication to the Excel part. So with this copied, let us try and record a test. So before recording the test, one thing to notice is now it is able to identify each of the cells separately. Okay, so let me start the recorder. I will do a simple Excel thing of summing up of three or four numbers. So I type on a few different cells, then I sum. Then probably okay. So let us generate code here. Yeah. So this is the sum.
Okay.
Okay. And maybe just to ensure I summed it right, I might want to verify that also. So I will drag and drop. So over here, I can get a bunch of Excel-specific properties, like worksheet name, value, formula, all these things. So let me add assertion on the value. That value is actually proper. And maybe formula also, that it is sum equal to this. So I add those assertion and generate method on that. So if I go to the recorded method code over here, I can see it's using the assert method. It's getting those properties and verifying the values. Okay, so let us before going further, let us first run the test and then ensure it is working. So just to make things get a little difficult, I will change the row width and all those things, so that to ensure this is not a coordinated playback by coordinate. So I change the row width, column width. I can even change the worksheet to different worksheet. And let me try with this. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Okay. So this was the sample that I developed probably in 3-4 days just for this demo. Okay. Oops. Yeah. Okay. And so thank you. And if I want, I can even use those wrapped. So one of the properties that I am exposing is whether to wrap the text or not. So if I want, I can even use those properties to wrap this text and all those things. So I'm running out of time. Let me skip that part. So quickly, what does it mean to implement a plugin? Let us go through that. So the first part is like extension package. So we have a class called UITest extension package. So all the extensions should be deriving this package. And for each different extensions possible, like the technology adapter or the technology manager that we call at the bottommost here in that diagram, or the property provider which can give me the richer properties or modify my code generation experience. For each of these various extensions, we call this method called getService, and it is supposed to return either one or more classes that implement that service. So in this case, I am returning two. One is the technology manager, essentially the technology adapter for that technology, and the second one is the property provider. So let us go through these. So the technology manager is the core thing which controls how it works for that technology. So again, I won't go into much depth over there. If you want to go through in this in depth, catch me. I am here for next 3 days. I will be happy to talk to you anytime. So the key method over here is to identify which control you are supporting and return an integer value So this is a get control support giver method that is called by, so for each window, we call this method on each plugin. And then the engine picks one, the plugin that returns the maximum value for this. So if you are supporting a control, return a higher value to get this. Yes. So it's not that we are creating the third set of accessibility framework, and using UIA accessibility model or say UIA provider kind of model to ensure we work on something else was definitely something which we looked at, but like the requirements for testing and the requirement for accessibility in all cases doesn't match. So just to give you an example, in this case, I had focus on another sheet, and I got to the right sheet, worksheet, and then did the operation. So that is what we call ensure visible. So I ensured I can get focus to the right worksheet and do the operations. So some of these concepts are slightly difficult to do in just by using UIA automation. So if you have a standard control, if you have a custom control that matches with some standard control or something like that, implementing UIA can give you a good support. But if you have altogether different technology, like in Excel, it's very different. The grid concept is not kind of standard control, like properties like formula and all those things are not there with the standard table cell. So for those things, it's better off to implement this way.
From which the product benefits, but at the same time, we're sort of...
No, so that is still true. That is why I had showed the earlier section. So if you have custom control, implementing those things will still get you there. This is more about when it is altogether different UI technology, and you don't have those support. Okay? You are not the custom control vendor. You don't have that source code. You can't easily implement accessibility. So this is about those scenarios. You want to... not just support one control, but you want to support an entire UI technology platform. Yeah.
There's also another thing to consider here, which is UIA is a set of building blocks, so is MSAA. Mm-hmm. There are some application behaviors and control behaviors which can't be captured directly in UIA semantics. So if any of the control vendors are here, DevExpress and Progistics, they produce grids, which are really applications, not really just grids in terms of the functionality. And sometimes that is impossible to express purely in UIA terminology. So what Gautam is saying here is, yes, implement MSAA in UIA, but this is another option that you would do as well to ensure that the application behavior semantics of a given piece of UI or control are captured rather than just the automation, the UI automation semantics. There's a subtle difference here. So it's not an either or, it's a we like both, please.
Yes.
Sorry, just another one. There's a documented set of control patterns that were available for UI automation.
Mm-hmm.
Would this apply to everything that's outside of those basic patterns that you have, essentially? So it's not a button, it's not a drop-down list. It's something that's outside of those patterns and doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, this kind of support would need to be built to those kind of controls.
Yes, definitely. So if there's something which doesn't match the standard controls or the standard set that UIA has, you definitely have this as an option to support those.
This is a supplementary question. Has that changed between UIA and the coded UI test program? Are there more patterns available, or is it the same set?
So let me step back. What I'm saying is if you support UIA well, the coded UI test will work anyway. This part of thing where I'm extending, the demo is more about, let us say I don't have those things. So I'm trying to support, say, for SAP or something else, where I'm not the author of those controls. Okay, and I can definitely write a client-side UIA provider for those. But this might be better option just from the testing perspective. UI will give you overall better accessibility, but this might be a better option overall to get those support from testing perspective. So I'm running out of time. Let me complete the slide part, and then I will take questions at the end. Okay. So control support level was one part that we showed. And the other two important methods over here in the technology manager is what is my focus segment, so that I can record all my keyboard actions, and what is my element at point, so again, I can easily record all mouse action. And the element itself over here is just an abstraction that gives me various properties of that element. Okay, so let me move back to the slide. So in this part, we just mainly saw the extensibility scenarios for coded UI test part of the test product that we have, test queue. There are other extensibility scenarios in the test queue, like around test storage execution. So the entire test case management is exposed to object model. Using that, you can write tools that uses that does something with the object model, like migration from some other framework test case management solution to the Microsoft test case management solution, interop, these kind of things. As I mentioned earlier, coded UI test uses unit test extensibility, so you can use that to create your own test types. The planning, process integration, reporting, these kind of things are exposed to process template and other things that was earlier demoed by the TFS team. So you can use those things to customize, add more reports around testing functionalities, all those things. Data correction, we have talked earlier that data correction happens through something called data corrector. So you can write your own data corrector to correct different kinds of data and add that to the bug or the report that we generate. For example, one of the partners are writing data correctors for security vulnerabilities in the application. So when testing is going on, the partner is inspecting, analyzing the application under test for security vulnerabilities and adding that report to the bug. So these kind of scenarios are possible. To quickly summarize, if you are control vendors, implement accessibility. Okay, you do that right, you will get lot of value out of it. We'll get lot of value out of it. Customers will get lot of values out of it. Then overall test features, all the features have rich extensibility, and there's plenty of partnership opportunities. If you're interested, talk to us. We are here. We can help you. So that's it. I can take more questions. I have probably 2 minutes to go. Anyone? Yeah, I will come back to you if no one else has any question. Okay. Yeah, you are on.
The extensibility, is there a way to customize the code that's been generated out of the tool? Like, what will ship in 2010?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to say, like, I want to hook the code generation part?
Yeah. So the question is there a way to customize the code generation capabilities? So there are two things. One is I can entirely rip and replace the code generation with my own. Okay, so that is entirely possible. If I go back to the, So the code generation is nothing but an interface called action invoker, UI test action invoker, so which takes a UI test object and does something on that. So that interface is exposed, and I can rip and replace that with my own action invoker right here. So that is one option. And the other option is if I want some minor tweaks in the code generation and all, I can do that by this piece over here, property provider. So if, for example, for some operation, let us say edit box. So the default code generation when you type something on an edit box is dot text equal to this. If instead of text property, I want to use, say, something else, text 2, I can do that using this. So minor customization I can do using this, and then I can completely rip and replace. Yes?
What's the state of SharePoint testing that I can use today?
Yeah, so SharePoint is in the state of partially supported in that diagram. So essentially, most of the things in SharePoint work except where you interact with the ActiveX object. So in SharePoint, you can invoke certain Office ActiveX object. So that portion apart, rest of the part works with the SharePoint. OK. But if I go back to that diagram, overall long-term goal is to have complete support for SharePoint. Any other questions?
So web tests and all those sorts of things are using this just under the covers, or all those work together?
No, web test is different. Yep. Web test is recording the HTTP traffic versus this is recording the UI actions. So those are completely different. They are not using anything common today.
And you use this, can you use this in load testing then? Right.
So in VS 2010, you cannot.
So
in general, it's a really bad idea to use unit tests to drive load. Use UI tests to drive load, because you can't get the concurrency because you run out of GDI resources long before you can get the concurrency. And because of the timing behavior, you can't really drive the machine to the max. If you look at how web performance tests works today, it uses async HTTP calls to be able to emulate anything from 1,000 to 2,000 virtual users per CPU. You'll never get anywhere near that in the UI space. Mm.
Yeah, so the question is, how much of this functionality is there in 2008? None of this is in there in 2008. All this is new in 2010. OK? So anything else? I'm here. Sorry.
There was one question back here, which was, I think there's confusion about the different test types. Mm-hmm. So in VS 2005 and 2008, we shipped a test type called web test. That's what Gautam was referring to when he said that uses HTTP. That doesn't do any UI recording or any UI playback. It happens to push a recorder into the browser, but that's just a way to help get things going. It actually records the HTTP traffic. If you watch when it plays back, there's never a browser that pops up. What Gautam's been talking about here is coded UI testing, which does work at the UI layer, works for web, Win32, WPF, WinForms, SharePoint, all the rest of the stuff he talked about. Those are two completely different tests, implemented different ways, different semantics, different behaviors, different usages. In fact, we renamed the web test to web performance test to try and save some of the confusion on a web UI test. But there is no specific web UI test. There is just UI tests that Gordon showed you, and we work out, his team does the magic to work out whether it's client or web. It doesn't really matter, because you can mix and match.
Yep. So I'm out of time. Any questions? I am here for next 10, 15 minutes. Catch me. And anything more deeper dive you want, I'm here for next 3 days. I will be happy to show you. Thank you.